Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we are going to start the sutta teaching session. So in this session, we are referring various suttas which Buddha has preached, and we are trying to get some insights from those, because sutame jnana, or the wisdom that we are trying to obtain from Buddha's teaching, is immense, and there are various insights and various guidance that we can actually take from those suttas. So far we have discussed several suttas, started with Sabbasava Sutta, and then we discussed about Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, and now we are discussing Mahasatipatthana Sutta. Mahasatipatthana Sutta, as you already know, is available in Majjhima Nikaya as well as in Digha Nikaya. There are the middle length discourses and the long discourses are included, and also there are so many Satipatthana referred suttas all together collected and put it in the Samyutta Nikaya, that is called Satipatthana Samyutta. And we have taken Satipatthana Sutta from Majjhima Nikaya, and this sutta was preached by the Buddha while he was residing at a city called Kammasadamma, and it belongs to the country of Kuru. So at that time, Buddha talking to the bhikkhus, and he is mentioning about ekayana magga. Ekayana ayam bhikkave maggo sattanam visuddhiya. Monks, there is a direct path to purification of the beings. Soka pariddhavanam samatikka maya. In order to overcome sorrow and lamentation. Dukkha domanassanam atthagamaya. In order to eradicate suffering and various types of mental despair. Nyayasa adhigamaya. And in order to know the correct path, in order to know the direct path, in order to know the real path which ultimately leading us to the complete liberation. So in order to know that correct path, the noble path, and that is also as a result or as a benefit of practicing Satipatthana. Nibbanasa sacchikiriyaya. In order to realize Nibbana. So all these benefits which Buddha refers are extremely valuable benefits and extremely important benefits. And as Buddhists, you all want to realize Nibbana, and as all Buddhists, we want to realize the correct path, and we want to remove whatever the suffering, lamentation, sorrow. So all these are very necessary benefits. As human beings, we all desire these benefits, and therefore in a way Satipatthana becomes one of the key path, one of the key methodology which Buddha has mentioned. And it is not actually unique to our Buddha. Even the previous Buddhas have preached the same Satipatthana. So therefore, while our Buddha, Gautama Buddha, was referring Satipatthana Sutta, or he planned to preach Satipatthana Sutta immediately, one Brahma called Sahampati appeared in front of him, and he praised Buddha, telling that you have taken the correct path, you have taken the direct path, you are now going to preach that noble Sutta. And this is what Sutta mentioned or preached by various previous Buddhas as well. So they also understood that the purification of the beings is possible by this Satipatthana. So you too have now selected preaching that sutta, and therefore I pay my reverence, I pay my homage to you. So like that, there were such incidents have happened even before Buddha preached Satipatthana. So we can understand there is a great importance to our practice, and that's why we have taken this sutta. And Buddha starts with sort of giving us the summary. Ida bhikkave bhikkhu kaye kayanupassi viharati. So in this sasana, in this very life, so a monk, a practitioner, is now taking his own body and trying to contemplate. He is looking at it directly. It is not through a book, it is not through from someone else's information or someone else's guidance. Rather, you yourself have to look at the body. So this is a direct experience. So that is why kaye kayanupassi. That term refers that one has to look at one's own body, and it is immediate, it is so electric, and it is so direct. It is not inferential, but rather it's a direct knowledge. Atapi. So there are four qualities where Buddha refers here. Atapi, Sampajano, Satima, Vinaya Loke, Abhijja Domanasam. So this actually refers sort of prerequisites, or we can say sort of background qualities that we need to maintain as much as possible. Atapi. One has to have ardent effort, because the path may not immediately give you satisfactory results. Because as you know, our minds are constantly distracted towards the past incidents, past memories, and again thinking about the future, planning about the future. So there are constant distractions, constant restlessness available in the mind. So if one is trying to immediately keep your attention on the present moment, so it may not be immediately successful. So one has to be fairly patient, and one has to fairly endure the situation, and that actually requires ardent effort. So one has to maintain a long-term effort. It is not a 1 week, 10 days effort. Rather, one has to maintain a long-term effort, several years. And while practicing, again, there may be day-to-day unsatisfactoriness, day-to-day troubles, obstacles might come on your way. So in order to overcome that, so there are also effort necessary. And while practicing, one has to calm down the effort. It is not that you are maintaining a great effort during the practice, but it is circumstantial. One has to maintain necessary amount of effort, otherwise the other factors might not grow. So likewise, there's a beautiful balance one has to maintain when one engage in the practice practically. And then atapi sampajano. Sampajano is where clearly knowing. One has to know clearly what is the primary object. The details or the behavior of the primary object has to be clearly known. Satima. One has to be mindful, in the sense one has to have very good present moment awareness. Vinayi loke abhijja domanasang, as much as possible one has to overcome or keep aside greed and aversion. So now under this kayanupassana section, we have already discussed anapanasati. That is the method Buddha first mentioned in this sutta, and how one can be mindful while maintaining one's attention on breathing. Breathing is a process available from our birth moment and till the death. So this is again a very natural process. It's an involuntary process. We don't need to purposely breathe. Rather, we can, the breath happens, or rather the body breathes. So now we are trying to use that involuntary process in order to improve our mindfulness, increase our mindfulness. So I'll just summarize that part. Basically, Buddha asks us to find a suitable place, because at the beginning you need to have as much as possible a silent place, a secluded place, a pleasant place, a place which is things are in order, so that the mental environment would be so pleasant. So when one found such place, one has to keep oneself direct or erect. One sit cross-legged as if possible, and keep the upper half of the body erect, the neck erect, and again head also straight. And one may close one's eyes in a very gentle manner, and one has to keep one's attention at the nostril or closer to the upper lip. So while keeping one's attention there, one should know in breath. When in breath happens, one should know that. One should be aware of that. And when out breath happens, one should be aware of that. Sato vasa sati, sato passa sati. So this is in a way appear very simple, but as you know, practically when we are engaged with it, so many distractions, so many disturbances, mind doesn't like to stay with such neutral object. It appear very boring, so you might fall asleep, or you might again start thinking about the past or the future. So many difficulties. But the technique itself is extremely simple. And again, we should not make it complicated either. So as much as possible, we have to maintain this simplicity. The the simplicity of the technique, taking us to the more deeper levels of understanding, more deeper levels of realizations. So therefore, we should never contaminate that technique. We should never complicate that technique. But unfortunately, our mind never appreciates it. So at the beginning, so we need to take various ways and means to tackle it. So we may be using labeling, counting, in order to take our mind to the present moment. And once we are successful, so we can maintain our attention on series of breaths. There are series of in-breaths and out-breaths. For continuously, we may be able to maintain our attention. Then we say, okay, our mind has fairly tamed. Our mind can now stay with 100 breaths, 200 breaths. So while doing that, Buddha does not stop us there. So he requests us to observe the breath closely, trying to recognize its characteristics, whether it is long, whether it is short, what are the differences between in-breath and out-breath, from which nostril it goes in, from which nostril it goes out, whether it is warm, whether it is cool. So likewise, there are very minor differences, subtle differences. So one should try to recognize these subtle differences. That actually improves the clear comprehension, sampajanya. And while doing that, we may reach the second or the third stage. That is where we are trying to know the complete phases of the breath. It is not abruptly breath begins, rather it begins very slowly or very gradually, starting with very gentle, soft manner, and then reaching to its middle, and then again fading away and ultimately disappears. And just before the beginning of out-breath, there's a little gap. And the out-breath also begins very softly, gradually, and it also reaches its threshold, the middle part, and then again that too fades away. And again after a little gap, the next in-breath begins. So likewise, there's a cyclic nature to this breath. So one has to recognize that. Now if we get on to today's topic, now we can actually come to the second part where Buddha talks about Iriyapata Pabba. So breath is actually a refined object. On the other hand, various postures that we all maintain daily are in a way little gross. So sometimes for certain people, rather than immediately going to breath, maybe it is easy to go to the posture. Say for example, while sitting, you can know that you are sitting. The body is sort of kept comfortably and legs are bent and body is erect. The upper half of the body is erect. You are keeping your hands on your lap. So likewise, as a pyramid, as a hands hill, so the body appears very stable. So you can keep your attention on this stable sitting posture. On the other hand, if you are on a lying down posture, that too can be known. Again, if you are in standing posture, that too can be known. Again, if you are in walking posture, that too can be known. So likewise, we can know in which posture at the moment or present moment which body maintains. So these postures therefore is used as a technique to establish mindfulness. Say you are waiting for a bus. At that time maybe you are standing. So at that standing position, you can have a sort of introspection. You can have a sort of attention to your whole body, the standing posture. Say your whole weight is concentrated at your foot, at your soles, at your heel, and the calf muscles are rest. So likewise, you are sort of scanning the body and maintaining your attention within the body. Similarly, while walking. Now, walking, also another posture that we are daily using. But even though we use it, we never become mindful about this posture. We may be planning what we are going to do after we reach the destination, but the body is walking. Or we may be thinking about the past, what has happened, but the body is walking. So instead of thinking about the past and the future, one is now trying to maintain one's attention on this present moment walking. Body is currently walking, and our mind is also now trying to be aware of that walking. So the physical process and the mental attention or mental process are in harmony. We are trying to synchronize both processes. So that is quite important, because there are various activities daily we may be involved with, but our mind is not really engaged in that activity. Rather, mind is in a different world. Mind is dreaming. Mind is fantasizing. Now we are trying to break. So the walking posture is where we are trying to maintain our attention. And in this walking posture, Buddha specially mentioned about walking meditation. So walking meditation is actually one of the oldest technique practiced by many practitioners. Unfortunately, it was not given enough attention, not given enough prominence. So sometimes in certain traditions, it has also completely disappeared. Fortunately, there are suttas where Buddha directly mentions even the benefits of walking meditation. Say, for example, there is a beautiful sutta called Chankamananisansa Sutta in Anguttara Nikaya, where Buddha talks 5 benefits of walking meditation. Starting with Adhanakkhamohoti, refers as one is able to walk for a long distance. You know, during the good old days, there are no vehicles or any other transporting methods. Rather, one has to use one's walking in order to reach a destination. So, on such situation, if one can't walk or one is unable to walk, then it is difficult to reach that destination. But if one practices walking meditation, so that actually helps to develop this skill so that one can reach even long distance. So this Adhanakkhamohoti refers that the skill or ability where one can reach long destination, or one can travel long distance. Then Padhanakkhamohoti, that is where one can have a enduring practice. One can do a great practice, a great endurance, great effort. Because walking meditation itself is a challenging process, challenging task. So you are developing walking meditation itself in that challenging environment. So if you are successful, then that ardent effort or that skill can be used to various other activities as well. You may have various other day-to-day activities. Those are challenging, and there are various obstacles coming on your way. And you can face them bravely because you have trained during the walking meditation. So this Padhanakkhamohoti refers that we are, in order to attain liberation, in order to have full realization, you need great effort. So this great effort is slowly being developed through the walking meditation. Then Buddha says, Appabadho Hoti. So one become free from various illnesses. One become healthy, because walking is a very good exercise, and as a result, so your digestions become very good, and again your body become fairly flexible, active. As a result, there are so many ailments will be disappeared, so your body become healthy. Asite pite khaite saite Samma parinamam gacchati. So while walking, all the digestion system functions very well. So therefore Buddha mentions, so if you want to have that benefit, so that is also available through the walking meditation. And lastly, Buddha mentioned, Chankamadi gato samadhi chirattitiko hoti. Where the concentration, the one-pointedness, developed through walking meditation is long lasting. Now if you consider the samadhi, concentration develop through sitting session. It might be easily broken if someone come and talk to you. If someone, if once you are getting up, if there is a disturbance, if there are noises. So likewise, the concentration develops while sitting is fairly fragile. But on the other hand, if one is able to develop fair amount of concentration through walking practice, so that is lasting, that is enduring, that is durable. So that benefit is also there. So therefore, there are many benefits in walking meditation, and the way one practice is to find a suitable place. You may sort of prepare your house or prepare your corridor, or if possible, you can have a separate walking path, and you go to the one side and you are simply going to the other side without taking any burden. Simply you walk here and you walk from this end to the other end. So after practicing that for about 5 minutes, so then you become familiar with the walking path, and then slowly you have to keep your attention on the touching sensation of the foot, and each time you are intentionally walking, each step is taken intentionally, and you are keeping your eyes open, and as much as possible you are not moving your hands, you are keeping it in the front or the back. And while doing that, you are sort of maintaining your attention in the front and not entirely focusing on any particular place, rather the eyes are simply guiding you. And while doing such activity, you are trying to keep your attention on the foot. So each time the foot is lifted and moved and then placed. So if this complete process or this complete activity has to be done very mindfully. So likewise, if one is able to develop this walking meditation, walking practice, one is able to develop mindfulness and the ability to correctly aim one's attention and to immediately keep one's attention on the place where it is necessary. There are so many benefits. And there are other postures like sitting posture. There also you can keep your attention on the body. And later the sitting posture become refined. Actually, when you are being aware of various postures, sitting posture, walking posture, standing posture, lying down posture, if you are able to maintain continuous mindfulness throughout the day, then you may understand, although I am talking that I am living, I am eating, I am walking, I am sitting, if we keep out this I part, there is nothing but series of postures. And Buddha says, gacchantova gacchami iti pajanati. When one walks, one is aware that one is walking. Titova titomhi iti pajanati. When one standing, one knows that one is standing. Nisinnova nisinnomhi iti pajanati. When one is sitting, one knows that one is sitting. Sayanova sayanomhi iti pajanati. So that means when one is lying down, one knows that one is lying down. So likewise, so all the postures can be used to be mindful, and then you may understand it is nothing but postures. Constantly, it's a matter of maintaining postures. And these postures are also changing. So you may switch from one posture to the other posture. From lying down posture to the sitting posture. From sitting posture to the standing posture. From standing posture to the walking posture. Again, from walking posture to the standing posture. From standing posture to the sitting posture. So likewise, continuously, if you refer the whole day, every time, so we can understand, constantly we are changing postures. So there's the beginning of the standing posture, and there's an end of standing posture. That may be the beginning of sitting posture. And there's a beginning of sitting posture and then the ending of sitting posture, and that is where we may be lying down. So that is the beginning of lying down. And then we are lying down, and then again suppose we are sitting, That is the ending of the lying down posture, and now that is the beginning of the sitting posture. So likewise, there is a sort of beginning and end of each posture. And Buddha actually includes all the other minor postures as well. Yatha yathava panasakayo panihito hoti tatha tathanam pajanati. Where whatever the minor posture or sub posture that one is maintaining, so even that one is knowing. So this is where our mindfulness become refined, and not only the four main postures but even the sub postures or minor postures are included. So this is where actually the rising and falling also comes under, where when you are sitting, so at the beginning you simply have the sitting posture, awareness of sitting posture, but as your awareness refines, as your mindfulness refines, there you can recognize various subtle processes available in the body. So it may be breathing, it may be rising and falling, it may be heart vibration. So likewise, there are so many various other subtle processes, bodily processes available. So you can even pay attention to those bodily processes. Those are also comes under these subtle postures. Now, when as you're breathing in, the abdomen comes forward, rising. As you breathe out, abdomen comes back, falling. So each and every rising and falling contributes to the development of mindfulness. So you can be aware of this rising and falling. So rising and falling is one of the very popular method, because sometimes anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, could be a little difficult for certain people. But on the other hand, if we consider rising and falling, it's a very general technique, very easy technique. And again, the sensation is fairly gross. As a result, one can establish mindfulness using rising and falling very easily. So you are keeping your attention closer to the abdomen or closer to the tummy. And as you're breathing in, it comes up or comes forward. So you are simply being aware of this rising process. And as you breathe out, and it comes back falling, and you are fully aware of that. Actually, this process and mindfulness on breathing have good parallelism. They are actually developing very similarly. So you can be aware of rising, you can be aware of falling. And if your mind distracts, you can incorporate labeling. While rising, when you know it, you call it as rising. When it is falling, you label it as falling. Rising, falling. So likewise, you can maintain this labeling. Sometimes we call manasikara, noting. So this actually helps to calm down the mind, and again improves our attention, improves our concentration. And once it is fairly improved, we can stop labeling, noting, and we can try to keep a quiet mind. Simply well refined or silent, attention is kept on each and every rising, each and every falling. There you might understand it is not a single rising, it may be a series of rising. It may not be, it's not a single falling, it may be a series of fallings. So this is where our clear comprehension is improved. Sampajana. So each and every time Buddha refers, so once establishing mindfulness is the first step. Once you establish mindfulness, next step is to refine your mindfulness, refine your clear comprehension by paying closely attention to the primary object. There you can recognize subtle behavior of this object. And each rising has a beginning and it has a end. And there may be a little gap. And again, each falling has a beginning and then the end. And then there's a gap. Then again the next rising. So likewise, this also has a cyclic nature. And if you are able to recognize series of minute risings within a single rising, and then you can even recognize kind of arising and passing away, or beginning and ending of each this minute rising. Suppose there were 10 risings. And even in there, there's a beginning and end, beginning and end. And then you reach the gap, or it's a kind of a silent period. They are also, you can recognize there's a beginning and then the end. Then there's another series of fallings. So this minute falling also has a beginning and end. So you are recognizing each and every beginning and end. So this way, now Buddha is taking us to the Satipatthana Bhavana, where you are developing mindfulness. You are developing the careful attention. So your mind is well maintained on this rising and falling, and you are continuously paying attention, and you are maintaining good effort. You are not giving up, and you are able to overcome various hindrances, and you are clearly knowing the whole process. And as much as possible, you are maintaining a equanimous mind. Vinaya loke abhijja domanasam. You are, as much as possible, you are not greedy of the process, you are not attached to the process, or you are not having any sort of a resentment towards the process. As much as possible, you are maintaining a neutral attitude. So the proper background or the environment is maintained. While such conducive environment is maintained, you are observing this rising and falling process very closely. Now suppose you are able to understand this process, then you will understand there are so many minute kind of posture differences, posture changes, and even these posture changes you can be mindful. We sometimes call them as posture junctions, iriyapata sandhi, where you are able to recognize these junctions, these changes. So that is also where contributes towards the sati sampajanya, towards the clear comprehension. So likewise, we can understand, I mean, even though we start with establishing mindfulness, leaving aside the past and the future and sort of maintaining your attention in the present moment. So that is not the end. That is the first step. So once you are successful in first step, then you have to clearly know what is going on. You need to understand the full process. You need to understand the full behavior of the primary object. So that actually gives us opportunity to develop insight. And that is where Buddha says, okay, one will understand samudaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. Vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. Samudaya vaya dhamma anupassīva kāyasmin viharati. One constantly know that there's a arising nature to all these bodily phenomena. There's a passing away nature to this all bodily phenomena. Especially here the postures, sub-postures, posture junctions, and minute levels of various other posture changes. Now each bodily process therefore has a beginning and an end. And one clearly knows it, and for a favorable period of time, for a long period of time, one is observing it as a direct experience. It is not through a book, it is not through a preaching, rather one clearly knows it very directly. So this is extremely important. Here you are not trying to sort of forcefully condition your mind by putting or borrowing someone else's knowledge. Rather, you are maintaining a very fresh mind, very novice mind, but quite attentive, quite equanimous, and very fresh. And to that knowing mind, you are as much as possible teaching. So it's very much like educating a child. So child has a very fresh mind, he has a beginner's mind, and as much as possible we are trying to restrain him and not to sort of distract him, and we are now trying to teach him. So that teaching process has to be very effective. So similarly, our mind also like a child, so we are trying to keep it very simple, very gentle, and not distracted, carefully attentive. And to that, we are allowing various processes to go through. So then the mind will learn from all these processes. So these processes themselves have their real nature. So they are exposing that real nature. So we are learning from that real nature. So they will show how they are behaving, how they are rising, how they are passing away, how long are they going to last. So likewise, their real behavior is now evident to the mind. So through this, the mind has a deeper understanding. It's a kind of a realization. So this is where the last part of the section, attikayotiva panasya satipachchupattita hoti. So the mind will understand, okay, there is a body, there is no person, there is no individual, there is no I, there is no being, but there is a body or there is a bodily processes. Yavadeva jnanamattaya patissati mattaya. And there are various insights possible, like how transient it is, how impermanent it is, and constantly this whole processes are subjected to this transient nature, impermanent nature, and there are various other causes conditioning this process, and there are no control at all over these processes, and they are sort of causal or dependent arising, and I simply have no control at all. So basically you will understand this impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, and non-governability. And there is no inner essence of this whole process. There is no inner core. So there is no inner soul. There is no lasting soul. This non-self nature or non-self characteristics also going to be understood. So likewise, the three characteristics, three universal characteristics, anicca, dukkha, anatta, going to be deeply recognized, deeply understood. And that leads to sort of disenchantment, what is called nibbida, and one becomes dispassionate. The processes are there, you are now become dispassionate. You allow things to happen rather than trying to grasp things. Now you allow things to happen. And slowly the detachment improves, and there's a possibility of complete detachment or complete relinquishment. And there the mind become unassociated, not attached to anything in the world. Anisitocha viharati nachakinchi loke upadhyati. Where one's mind is completely liberated, but very temporary. And one's mind is completely free from any grasping to anything in the world. So when one has this kind of an insight, it's a kind of an eye-opening insight. So far, one's mind is extremely burdened and extremely hindered because of various defilements. But at least for a short period, one's mind is utterly free. So how to develop this freedom, how to enhance this freedom? So that is where a complete path, a methodology is needed. So that path is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. And that is how the Noble Eightfold Path come into the picture. So it's a matter of continuously maintaining this mindfulness practice, and one further and further improving one's sila, because one will understand without maintaining bodily and verbal conduct, morality, so one can't maintain a healthy mind. So the peace of the mind fairly depends on how you interact with others, how you maintain your sila. So with understanding, then one will maintain one's sila. So one has recognized the benefits of the sila. So it is not necessary for someone else to come and force you to maintain sila, that you yourself will understand the benefits of the sila. So the sila is there. And again, as much as possible, you are maintaining good words or good communication. And then you are maintaining good livelihood, correct livelihood. So the sila is improved. And again, you are maintaining mindfulness and the necessary amount of concentration so that you can clearly know what is going on. The clarity of the mind is there. Clarity of mind has to be maintained. So the time to time you may maintain the concentration or improve the concentration if it is necessary. Otherwise, the necessary clarity of the mind is maintained so that you can clearly know what is going on. And you have the correct view, so that is nothing but to maintain a disentangled mind or unentangled mind. A mind free from any burden, mind free from any stress, mind free from any clutteredness, or mind free from any defilements. To have a peaceful mind, have a clear mind, unentangled mind. So this is the kind of a vision so one is maintaining. So like this, so the Sila Samadhi Panya is now in operation. So one has to live a life according to that type of environment, so that type of criterion where one's morality is maintained, and then that supports the concentration, and the concentration supports the wisdom. And wisdom again will support the morality. So likewise, these three components are interdependent and interrelated, and they are helping each other. So likewise, so this Iriyapatha Pabba, so even though it is short, Buddha very clearly shows that how this whole system, whole Satipatthana system, can be practiced so that one's mindfulness is improved, one's understanding is improved, and so that one's mind is clean, clear, purified. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching part. Now I open the session for questions.